This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. Jewels of Illumination books 1-3 box set is out. Oben is a broken man who just might find redemption guarding a scholar from bandits, a criminal syndicate, and a dark necromancer. Avina is a woman haunted by guilt who has to learn if she can trust Oben. Together, they can break free of their past or be lost. You can buy or borrow Jewels of Illuminations books 1-3 from Amazon. Today, I'm joined by Tiffany Collins. She is the author of the alternative history / urban fantasy novel Reflections of a Runner, The Traveler's Journals Book 1.
How are you doing today, Tiffany?
Oh, pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. It's a sunny day today. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so how are you doing?
Oh, good. I'm in bright and sunny California. I just had a lovely Easter with my friends and my family. And now it's like my Mondays are off, so it's a nice relaxing day. I'm enjoying it.
Right. What part of California?
Northern California. So it's a tiny little 49er minor town with Tahoe National Forest right behind us and Otter Recreational Park right below us, and we're on a canyon ridge. So it's never going to expand. So if you like the small town life, this is the perfect location.
The small town life with the California taxes.
Yeah, but we also get California wages. I work for a library. I work for the Placer County Library during the day. And believe it or not, librarians in Placer County do fairly well. And if I get the position I want, eventually, by the time I get to retire, I'll be making $60,000 a year. I'll be very happy.
Okay, cool. Glad that works out for you.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's fine. You can finish.
Oh, no, it was something else about library, which we're not here to talk about. So it's all cool.
So I would like to start my interviews out with a fun question or two. So, Tiffany, what is your favorite genre of books to read?
Oh, urban fantasy, epic fantasy.
What's your favorite from both?
Well, I consider it as it's like it has one foot in each world is the Dresden Files from Jim Butcher. If I can meet Diana Gabaldon, I can meet George R. R. Martin, I can meet J.K. Rowling, and I wouldn't turn into a blubbering, spastic fangirl as much as if I actually ran into Jim Butcher, which will probably mean I'll never go to any signings, because I will come off as, like, an idiot, and I wouldn't want to do that.
Fair enough. Yeah, his stuff's good. I remember I picked it up on a lark back when Borders still existed.
Oh, well, I have to admit, I picked up the first two and they collected dust because I couldn't get through the first few chapters. At first, Harry Dresden came off as a chauvinist asshole and the author couldn't seem to write women who were either not trying to get what they wanted either by being more butch than the guys or by being a sex kitten. I'm like, oh my God, you know, there's a whole middle ground where most of us reside. But then my friend says, no, Tiff, seriously, once you get to book 4 and beyond, it's so much better. And it's true. So if you can get past the first three, which you have to read, because one of the things I love about his writing is that the best example I can give you is most people really loved J.K. Rowling's series because it was so well plotted out. She gave you so many cool hints about later books right there at the first part of the first chapter, and you're getting clues about Sirius Black. And the first time I read Harry Potter, I was just like, okay, wow, Sorcerer's Stone, okay, it was good, but I don't understand why it's this like cultural global phenomenon. But by book 3, I was just like, oh, I get it. She's a genius, and this is awesome. But she did it for 7 books. Jim Butcher's doing it for 20 plus books. And the level of detail's there, but it's on a much grander scale. So Harry Dresden is Harry Potter for adults on crack. And I love it.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I love it too. Like I said, I don't know. I was hooked right from the very beginning. But, I mean, I probably am not bothered by chauvinist male characters. So.
Yeah, and I was like, you're viewing it from a girl's perspective. And we're just like, really? Honestly, come on. There's like this whole like 90% of females out there that don't relate to the characters you're writing in the early books. But that's okay. He's still funny. And I swear to God, the comment. Have you read the whole series?
Yeah, I'm current on the series. Not on the short stories, but I'm up on all the,
the main books. As getting the new detail, I am the biggest fangirl. I have scoured the internet for every little scrap of gossip. I know it all. And one of the things that made me laugh the hardest was in Ghost Story when one of the Carpenter's oldest son was in that meeting, and one of the white vampires was there, and she was showing off her boobs as a means of distraction, and it totally made him mentally stumble. And Harry was making this internal commentary about how there's a correlation between when guys can start driving and at what age they can stop, like, the boobs are no longer the center of their universe, and this is not an accident. And I was just like, okay. It just made me laugh. It was like one of those 4 a.m. I'm up all night reading the newest release, and my roommates could hear me in the rest of the house. I'm like, sorry, guys.
Yeah, no, my beta reader, like, spoiled me on the big death in the last book. Not on purpose. She just said there was a big death coming. And then I was like, well, if I was the author, which character would it be? And then I was like, oh, it's this character. And that was that character.
Yeah, there's those two camps. They were both M camps as far as who's. And I'm like, okay, guys, what you don't understand, what you probably don't know, is because you're not as epically nerdy as me, is that Jim Butcher has gone on record as saying Harry is cursed in love. He's got two identifiers, and I can't remember the first one, but the other one is that he is unlucky in love, which means any romantic interest that gets to the I love you phase with him is not going to make it much past the second book that they are a couple. They're going to be it. That's it. They're gone.
I went from a different perspective as to what is the character, like, what does the character bring to the table? And this character can no longer really hang any longer.
Yeah, I know.
That was the other.
You have to get an upgrade or you get the axe because you can't keep up with the big boys
anymore. And so I was like, what to do with the character? And, you know, anyways, I understand why, from like a writer's perspective, like why he would do it.
And he loves to yank on the heartstrings. According to him, you're not doing your job as an author if you are not pulling on all of the entire gamut of human emotions. And of any character that's going to yank those heartstrings, that would have been it.
Yeah. I don't know. We really went off on a tangent here. So anyways, Tiffany, how long have you wanted to be an author?
You know, this is a funny, funny question I keep getting asked, and it's one of those where it's like, I don't have a whole lot of stories. I basically have this one story that keeps spiraling off, kind of like the neural networks in a brain. It's all just one thing, but it's also a million other things all tangled together. I've got other friends who pound out stories all the time, and I don't know if they had a definitive moment where they wanted to be a writer too, but they just had all these ideas in their head, and they started putting them all on paper, and some of them were brave enough to actually try to publish. I have lots of friends who don't tell anybody I'm writing. I don't want to be judged. So I'm like, cool, I'm special. You'll tell me. And then other people who write and write and write, but they never really get up that courage to go the extra step of putting it out there in the world, which, man, it kind of like takes a bit of guts, because when you're an author, as much as a lot of people might deny, oh, no, there's nothing of me in these books. I'm like, no. These books are like a window into your head, and you're giving untold masses of people access to your inner thinking. And whether you know it or not, you are letting them see you. And a lot of people feel naked and they don't want to be out there that exposed. And so they won't put their writing out there. But for me, I don't really care what people think of me. So I put it out there, and I write the stories that I wish I could find to read, but no one ever seems to write, so I figured I'll write them myself.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I write a lot of stuff, and it very much is very much a kind of a voyeuristic act of publishing your writing, because you really are, you're slipping a lot of yourself in different weird places in your books. It's not to say it's all you. I mean, otherwise every character would be you, and that would be boring.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is also coming from the world around you, what you've read, what you've heard, what you think about events, what you've heard other people express about what they think, and that's inspiration for certain characters. It's not that character is based off this person, it's just that you have a character who represents that viewpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, but just don't write yourself, because that's weird. I can speak from experience. Writing yourself into your story is really a weird thing to do.
But I'm the weirdo. But in my defense,
have you done that? Because I've had.
What?
I've done that. I in my co-author book with my insane co-author Michael Evan, he wrote us into the story, so I had to write myself as the author of the story, talking with my own characters. It is so weird.
Well, okay, we did one as a gag, and then there's the character that I based. So Danny's the main character in my stories. And like I said, in my defense, when I started writing seriously was when I was a freshman in high school. So I'm like 15. And so I get into this world. It was a fan fiction site for the Anita Blake series. I don't know if you remember that one.
Well, I was never into Anita Blake, but I do know who she is.
Well, the first six books are fabulous. Then you just have to pretend the author died, because it's like a ghostwriter took over for this author and started writing a completely different person who happens to have the name and physical description of Anita Blake. It's like, what happened? She went from military nun to S&M girl who does three ways with new guys in flip randomly through the books and find a different threesome with two new guys in every flip of the page, and you're like, oh my god, and these scenes would go for chapters, plural. Not just,
I really thought that's all it was, to be honest, from the beginning.
It's like, stop reading at Obsidian Butterfly and you're fine, but you go beyond that and it's a different series. But anyway, the scene that Danny originated from was called Sanctuary, and I only had to write the one character in a world that was like a writing commune, so it wasn't all mine. And I just kind of got to have a player, like an RPG, in this world. And my story would intersect with other writers' characters. And I'm like, oh my god, how do you create a whole person with a personality and a history? And it's like, it's a human being I'm writing, and I know nothing of them. I'm supposed to just fabricate one from scratch right now, fully grown? Oh my god, no, I'm just going to stick me in the story. And this is how we're a little different, but her favorite color is blue, like mine, and she wants to be a veterinarian like me. And I just went from there. And then she got put on the back burner for a long time, and I wrote another book, and I really enjoyed that. But then when I came back to Danny, I was like, okay, now that I get to put her in it's my world, I can write everything the way I want. But the core thing where she's being exploited as what's kind of like a human familiar. And I'm like, okay, so this is a thing in this world. Is it a like huge thing? Is it an underground thing? It only happens in rare instances, or is it pervasive throughout the entire culture? I went with pervasive. And I'm like, well, what kind of story kind of resonates with that? What kind of parallels that? Oh, well, this is kind of like slavery. And I'm like, slavery in humanity has been around since there were more than three people on the planet, and people started selling each other to each other. And
it originated with agriculture. I think you go to agriculture and that's you find slavery.
Well, yeah, it's like as soon as you start either taking prisoners of war or you start treating people like livestock, you have slavery somewhere in that culture. So I'm like, okay. But I don't know anything about how civil wars work, how you ramp up to them, how they fall out, and then how you deal with the leftovers. So I'm like, what can I use for a role model? Ooh, the Civil War and the Underground Railroad were really heavily documented. I have lots of material I can totally plagiarize from. And I don't have to invent anything. I'll just read these historical accounts and I'll just like turn him into a magical version. So I'm totally cheating. And so that's how Danny came around. I realized, oh crap, Danny's gonna go through a whole lot more than I'll ever have to suffer through, thank god. She's a survivor kind who will actually come out functional, which is way better than I would have been.
I mean, civil wars are, you have one part of a population that feels like they have no power in the society and that their only choice to have that power is to rebel, and whatever reason that is. And for the South, it was the economic interference of the North by trying to take away what they saw as the necessity for their whole way of civilization, as terrible as that is. There's some really you should read some of the defenses the South had for slavery. There's some really terrible, like they were claiming like, you know, if we freed our slaves, then they would just be taken advantage of by Northern capitalists who wouldn't pay them well. And like, they would starve to death. But we need to take care of them and be responsible. I'm not joking. They were literally saying that we can't have free labor because then they'll be abused. So we have to abuse them.
A way to say that it was justified in the Bible for what they were doing. They It's like you read some of those justifications.
You can find dust. I mean, there's not good. Going to the Bible is always a risky one because, I mean, I guess you can look at the Jewish form of slavery, but it was more indentured servitude and it was voluntary. And it was kind of just how you got a job back then. You'd like, yeah, I'm going to just agree to work for you for 7 years.
Well, that's called indentured servitude with the idea that it's kind of like a contract. And a contract.
It absolutely was a contract. You were like, I'm going to work for you until the next Jubilee year, which is every 7 years. And you're going to pay me up front for however long that's going to be. And you're going to promise that you're going to, you know, feed me, clothe me, and treat me well. But you still are kind of a slave because you do got to do whatever they say. But yeah. You had progressed. There were the sanctuary cities you could flee to if you thought your master was abusing you.
Right. Yeah, so there's different forms of slavery.
So that was the Romans.
What were you think gladiators were? Gladiators were slaves?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ones. I mean the Ottoman Empire was run by their slaves. They were too busy to do their bureaucracy.
The Egyptians? How do you think the pyramids got made?
The pyramids were made with actual skilled labor that weren't slaves, because we have all their records and stuff.
But they had a lot of the brute labor, the ones that you didn't need skill for.
Well, it took skill just to move those stones.
You have an overseer with the brains, and then you have a bunch of grunts that pull on the.
I'm not joking. They have the they found like the camps where they lived, all the laborers, and they were educated. They were paid, like because we have their accounts for like how much they were paid for the people hauling stone and stuff. They didn't use slaves. It was too important to use slaves. You needed people who knew what they were doing.
Well, that was definitely true. You definitely need people who knew what you're doing. But yeah, anyway.
Don't get me wrong. The Egyptians had slaves. They used slaves for other parts, mostly agriculture to do their farming for them.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, like I said, I had lots of material to draw from on that one when I came up with Danny's world.
let's talk about Danny, because she is maybe the main character of your book, Reflections of a Runner, which is about Danny. But she's also a character being written by someone else named Allison Clare.
What it is there's all different realities, right? And different versions of how history might have played out if things had gone differently. And that being said, which you can obviously infer that there's a limited number of variation, but the most closely related, or the ones that are not so close that, how do I explain it? Anyway, certain ones you can actually cross over to, right? And those are called related worlds. And so Alice happens to live in our world, and she runs across a journal. Turns out she thinks she might be crazy, but then maybe she's not. And the journal seems to be proof. But how did she know that it's not just more evidence of her psychosis? But she thinks it's magic. And it turns out that it's a journal that allows you to communicate with other people throughout the rest of the world. And the travelers who hop around to these different realities use them as a means of documenting their travels and communicating with home base back in 10A, which is where Danny lives. And at the time, Danny was using that to coordinate with other people in her version of the Underground Railroad. Alice just happened to stumble across one of these journals and starts talking with a person who's talking back to her, a.k.a. Riddle's journal or diary. And she goes, I really am bug nuts crazy. And Danny's like, no, you're not. And by the way, have you heard from this guy? Because I really need to talk to him. No, oh, God, what am I going to do? And then she goes radio silence. And Alice is like, what just happened? So anyway, Danny is telling her about events that happened way back. But then we also have Alice's story of what she's going through. And we have what Danny's currently working on. But she can't really tell you a whole lot because clearly the journals can be compromised. And she can't reveal too much of what she's currently doing, either right before the war or when she's in the war. So it's like trying to weave all that together. I don't know why I did this to myself. It's really complicated.
Yeah, there was a time when I thought about doing a parallel universe series into like a straight epic fantasy, and I was like, wow, this is going to be complicated.
Anyways, make a lot of notes.
Anyways, I didn't do it and did other things. But the idea is there. It just was like, oh, wow.
Someday you might get back to it. Mm-hmm. It could be like, you actually read my book. You think, God, this was stupid. I can do it so much better. My idea is way better. We're going to do it my way. That's where I get a lot of mine. I'm like, oh, why did this author do it like this? No, this is how it should have gone. This is why I wrote it my book.
Yeah, very true. So what was the inspiration behind doing parallel realities? And an alternate history and all that.
Oh, Well, mainly because I wanted to create a world in which it's familiar enough. I guess if you know history. And let me tell you, as someone who has struggled in my whole scholastic career with the subject of history, and I barely passed because I can't remember names, I can't remember dates or places or people, but I know random factoids and I love the narrative. I can remember narratives, but I'm like, yeah, this one dude, he had like the best army in the 1700s and he tried to like conquer most of Europe. But then, was it Waterloo? Anyway, so it's like, I kind of remember the
gist. It was Waterloo, yes.
But the story is what's fun. Well, now that I'm writing an alternate history, suddenly I have done more history homework in writing a story in which I've changed the last 2,000 years of history than I ever did to pass a test in school. And I think that's really funny. But I love the idea that in my world, I like the idea, and actually this was something mentioned in Fringe, the show Fringe.
Yeah.
Talked about how they wanted to play with an alternate version of how history fell out. But also remember, it's like everybody a lot of times assumes that we're living in the best version. And I'm like, no, if there's infinite different like infinite versions, then who's to say we are living in the best one? Maybe we're living in the mediocre one. Maybe there's a world where a lot more went right. And I actually wanted to write that one. And Danny's world, they have a lot of things that we got wrong that they do right, in my opinion, at least. But what they got wrong, they got really, really wrong. And it made for really messed up circumstances for certain individuals. And it's her trying to rectify that. But I like the idea that in one world, intelligent octopuses are the dominant life form on the planet. And they travel around in these land suits. And they're genius level octopus who don't interfere. They just like to go out into the universe and observe. Or another one where dinosaurs never went extinct. And they're the dominant life forms on the planet. I just love playing with all this. Some worlds have magic. Some worlds don't. And when I play with alternate history, I get to have all these things. They're all Earth. Some of them don't have any life. But you can go and you can mine the crap because you already know where all the resources are. So you can go into this world. You're not going to bother anybody, and you can mine everything all you want and not screw up your own environment. Yeah. So it's just, it's fun. I like the possibilities.
That does sound interesting. So where can our listeners find you on the internet?
Oh, my website. I'm one of those oddballs. I don't actually do social media. I think I have maybe 2-3 counts out of the whole gamut, and I'm almost never on there. I'm constantly in danger of losing my account because they think I'm bot or they think I'm inactive, which I am. But I have a website, and it's Tiffany with an I at the end, not a Y. So Tiffany-Collins.com.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it was really great talking with you, Tiffany.
It was fun talking to you, too.
Yeah. You have yourself a great day.
You, too.
All right.
Have a great day. Bye.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.